Hey, Barstool listeners, you can find every episode of this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
This is your Twisted Kings, Taylor Lewan and Will Compton. Summer is right around the corner.
Nothing is better than grabbing a refreshing Twisted Tea cold on the rocks. It's got 5% alcohol. It is the perfect drink to turn up your summer. And you might be wondering, is this a sponsored ad? Yes. But the truth is, the boys, we love Twisted Tea.
Dude.
Go buy it. Go drink it. Drink responsibly and tell your boys to buy it as well. Let's have ourselves a hell of a summer. Oh, don't be dumb. Drink responsibly.
Twisted Tea Brewing Company, Cincinnati, Ohio. Please drink responsibly.
Call Him Poppy, episode 2, featuring Alex Rodriguez. Shout out to Nutrisystem, by the way. Nutrisystem.com/BigPoppy50. Get you a big fat discount. You almost
huge
took a
discount.
To be
discount.
Teammates with this guy. How close did you actually come to becoming a Red Sox?
Oh, man, it was close. It was so close. We were, we have signed contracts and everything. John Henry, Tom Werner, myself, Lucchino was very involved. And commissioner signed the contract. We needed one more signature. That was our guy, Don Fear, who was the head of the union and did such a great job for such a long time. But he felt like taking a shortcut in pay would set the wrong precedent for the rest of the 749 players, which at the time sucked because I was like, I want to play with Poppy and Pedro and Manny and my boys. But in retrospect, when you look at collectively, you know, we're not just one player. We represent an entire union.
I feel bad about it because I feel like I waste winning like 5 more rings. not seeing that happening, but you know that this guy is like a brother to me. Mm-hmm. And I know so much about A-Rod that people don't know when it comes down to personality, when it comes down to dedication, focus, routine. I remember going back to the Mariner days.
Mm-hmm.
A-Rod was a step ahead of me. And I want people to know what happened when they call you up. And because Félix Fermín, who was the shortstop at the time, got injured.
Yeah.
And then, I guess when he saw A-Rod performing, he was like, okay, I'm ready. What ended up happening? I mean, I want people to know what really happened.
Well, I was 18 years old, and Félix Fermín got hurt, so they promoted me from Jacksonville, where it was AA. Jacksonville was hard enough. I was 18. I was in Jacksonville. It was smoking hot. But, you know, AA always had great pitching. I mean, just great pitchers, threw hard. And Félix Fermín gets down, he gets hurt, and boom, they promote me up to the big leagues. I go to Boston. That's where I debut my career in June of 94. And I was just, honestly, I was like shitting bricks. Mm-hmm. I was like, what the fuck? I'm 18 years old. My mom, my brother, my sister, they're in the stands. But I was just at Westminster Christian just a few months ago for prom, right? And I'm like, this is not supposed to happen. And I go 0-3 the first game, and then the second game I get a little base hit, little nubber against Valdez, Dominican pitcher. So I went, and you know, I was lucky to really come up under Lou Piniella, Ken Griffey, Jay Buhner, Jamie Moyer, so many great leaders, and it really gave
Randy
Johnson, David Segui, I mean, so many, on and on, Dan Wilson. And that's really important when you come up as a young player to have the veteran crew that are going to take care of you and nurture you. And that was a great time.
Is it true that you, when they told you that you were going to go back down, you were like, okay, I'm done with baseball?
Yeah, so what happened was, not the first time, but they sent me down 5 times in 1 year. Mm. And I basically said, Lou Piniella, I said, look, I should be a freshman in college. Why am I going up and down 5 times? I'm never going to develop this way. Just either leave me down or leave me up. But 5 times in 1 year was too much. And I remember driving home to Tacoma from the Kingdom, mm-hmm. to Tacoma, where AAA was. And I called my mom. And, of course, it was like midnight there. It was probably 3 in the morning here. I woke my mom up. And I said, Mom, get the house ready. I'm coming home. Here's where Plan B is going to come and play. I want to go play football at the University of Miami. And my mom said, are you, como? Tú estás loco.
Dominican mom, man, you know, they don't play. They let you know straight up what's happening.
I said, tú estás loco, muchacho. You nuts? She goes, if you come home, I'm going to change the locks. So I used to live with mom, of course. I was, you know, 19 years old by then. Yeah. And I said, well, what do you mean? I said, you get tough. You come home, you work your ass off, and you get back out, then you show Lou Piniella and your teammates in Seattle what you're all about. And I, sure enough, I came home. I ended up working my ass off, got in tremendous shape, learned from my mistakes. And I came back the next year and won a batting title as a 20-year-old and was second in the MVP to Juan Gonzalez.
Shout out to our presenting sponsor, Nutrisystem for Men. Listen up, everyone. Can you imagine anything easier than getting food delivered to your door to help you lose weight? Anyone, and I mean anyone, can lose weight with Nutrisystem because it's simple. It's all planned out. You can get your breakfast, your lunch, dinner, and snacks. You don't have to worry about cooking, and the food is delivered right to your door. You just eat the food and lose the weight. You can lose up to 30 pounds in 90 days.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. 30 pounds in 90 days.
They would not even recognize me.
The food is really good. If you don't believe me, they offer a money-back guarantee. It is easy. I know, Poppy, you like the bars?
I'm just trying it.
You're big into the bars. I love the vanilla. I mean, I do some of the powder here. Love that. You can get a promo code right here. It's Nutrisystem.com/BigPoppy50. 50% off 2 months of food plus free shipping. It's a hell of a deal. Check it out today.
We'll get to the 05 MVP race in a second, but I want to go back to like your childhood, because I think you both discovered your love for baseball in the Dominican Republic, but mm-hmm. you didn't have like the father figure to kind of guide you in that mm-hmm. direction. How did you find your love for baseball?
Well, early on in Dominican, Victor, my father, who passed a few years ago, he was still with my mom. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until Miami when I was 10 that he left the family, and I was left with my brother, my two siblings, Joe and Susie, and my mom. And but early on in baseball in Dominican, it's like a religion. I know yeah. how great his father is.
Yep.
He's a good friend of mine. I love him. He's always been around. He's always been consistent in Poppy's life. But what I like about his father, he was like a father to everybody. Like when he was there, everybody just smiled. And he was always there, and I love that. And, you know, the thing about baseball for us as Dominicans, it's like a religion. It's family, it's religion, it's baseball, right? And maybe Presidente.
But, you got that right.
Because we like to drink in DR.
Yeah.
But I loved it. You know, I came up in Dominican watching Licey Escogido. You know, I came up playing, loving Licey. Him and I played for Escogido,
yeah,
the Red Team.
The winnable team over there.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's like Yankee Red Sox kind of
exactly.
thing. And so for me, baseball was really, I saw it as a way out of the island. Like, I can actually make a great living if I'm great at baseball. And, it was in many ways my savior.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's, like, fascinating to, like, come from, like, that same place and how once you showed up in Boston, because there were a lot of Yankee hats in the Dominican yeah. at the time, then you start to see that influx of Red Sox hats. So like it's almost like you're fighting over like territory in the Dominican while you're playing baseball in the United States.
Well, he converted. I mean, honestly, between him, Pedro, and Manny, if you're a Dominican, you have no choice but to follow the Red Sox. And they actually converted an entire country from blue to red.
Yeah.
And everywhere you went, you saw Red Sox fans.
Right.
It wasn't like that growing up. There was more Dodgers because, you know, the Dodgers had a great affiliation to Dominican. They were mm-hmm. one of the early teams that had a farm down in Dominican. So Pedro Martinez, Ramon Martinez, a lot of our Pedro Guerrero.
Yeah.
So a lot of that connectivity was to the Dodgers. But once Poppy, I mean, not only did he bring the championships, unfortunately for me, but he also brought the swag for Dominican Republic.
Was that impromptu home run derby with Seattle where it was like Griffey and you were there and then David just shows up? Was that your first like introduction to David?
No.
So you
no,
guys knew each other before that?
Way before that.
But reality was that they commit the major league team commit to come to where I was, which was able to play. I don't know how teams.
Exhibition
I don't
game.
Think I don't think they do that anymore, right?
No,
but back then, team normally used to do that just to bring fans and get people more familiar with the major league baseball club. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So Seattle came. They were supposed to play a game with us, and it rained. So they don't want to just shut everything down. So once the rain stopped, the field was mobbed. But somebody came out with the idea of doing a home run derby.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I was hitting ball in the highway.
Yeah.
That was when the power came up and people was like, wait a minute, what's going on with this kid? All of a sudden, I got traded to Minnesota, but that was a great experience. That was one of my most unbelievable experiences playing the minor league. And it was because, first of all, and seeing my boy doing the damn thing in the big league. Mm-hmm. Griffey, guy was one of my idols. Mm-hmm. Jay Buhner. Bro, when I saw this guy, because being in the minor league, you see those guys from far away. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Basically, sometimes you bump into, once in a while, it was hard to bump into Griffey or Jay Buhner, one of those guys, in camp early. But Griffey's father and Ken Griffey and Cora and Aaron, those guys, they always used to get familiar with the minor league guys, especially with us coming from Latin countries and stuff like that, take us out to eat, you know, spend time with us and things like that. It got really, really, really good to the point where all you want to do is like, I got to get to the big league to really hang out with those guys, right?
That's right, that's right.
Because, mm-hmm. I mean, like, he's a 1-1, so you know right away, superstar player. When did you see that in David? Because I feel like it's completely different paths to the big leagues with, I mean, there's 1,200 home runs sitting right here.
Jared, let me tell you something. There's a lot of people that say, I knew this, I knew that. It's all a bunch of bullshit.
Yeah.
I knew Poppy was a superstar since the minute I met him, and I'll tell you why. First of all, he has this it factor. Right, he's just a tremendous human being. Right, I'm talking to him like he's not here, but he's got a tremendous heart. He's one of the most unselfish people I've ever met. He truly wants we to win, not I. Mm-hmm. Right, and he makes everyone around him better. Now, if you look at him from instructional league early on, like in with us in with the Mariners, he was a. It's an interesting thing because it's a juxtaposition of him being so good in Dominican Republic and Escogido. He was already big poppy in Dominican. When we traded him to Minnesota, you know, it looked like his game wasn't really the guy that we saw in Escogido. I mean, he was a power force. And it looked like in you know, Minnesota, they had him, like, doing this inside-out stroke that wasn't really him. Mm-hmm. I knew that Big Poppy was just a matter. And the minute he went to the Red Sox, they said, hey, let it fly. Be yourself. Get a ball. If you want to pull it, pull the hell out of it. Mm-hmm. And he went from David... Right, David in Minnesota, to Big Poppy in the Red Sox, and the rest is history. Mm-hmm.
The true story, based on what he just said, I remember my very first game in spring training. Once I got to Boston, we were playing Minnesota. I came to hit very first spring training game. Grady Little was the manager. I came to him in men and second. I was facing Kyle Loesch, sinker bowler. Remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Man in second. Kyle threw me the two-seam running away, mm-hmm. and I went like this and grounded out to second, but I was just trying to move the runner over. I thought that when I got back to the dugout, I thought it was going to be like in the Minnesota days. Everybody, oh, yeah, like you just went deep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, good job, good job. Nobody stand up. When I got back to the dugout, the manager put me to the side and went like, hey, big boy. Next time, I don't want you to move him over. I want you to bring him in.
Right,
when I went, like, back in business.
Yeah.
Because now, it's not all about trying to change my swing or trying to get me hitting line drive over the shortstop. No. Let it fly.
Yeah.
And that's when I began to be who I end up being, a power hitter that people expect me to hit homers and stuff like that.
So let me bring you back to 2002. And Poppy will remember this. I knew that he wasn't being maximized and his talents weren't being used properly, I thought, in Minnesota. They were underutilized. And he had Minkiewicz, and he had others around that he was, like, mixing up time, not playing against lefties. I'm like, these people are not seeing a superstar. I know Big Poppy. They think he's David. So I told our owner in Texas, Tom Hicks, I said, hey, we got to go get this guy in Minnesota.
I remember that.
He's unbelievable. So I started talking to him on the field.
You were calling me.
And then I called him, and I said, hey, would you come down? Could you come down to Minnesota? He's like, hell yeah, I love Texas. Hot down there. It's just like Dominican. We're going to crush it together.
Yeah.
You hit third. I hit fourth. Like, we were going back and forth. And Tom Hicks, I believe, came up to like $1 million, and then he pulled it back and then gave the Red Sox the opportunity to step in and get him. And obviously the rest is history, but I wanted to get two players down to Texas. One, and both were Dominicans, and both played the corners, and both were underutilized. Poppy and Batista.
Yeah,
Batista. Because
he was at Pittsburgh, and the same thing. He was being underutilized. I knew he was a big, supreme talent that was just, there was a lot of talent there. And I felt like if we got Bautista and Poppy, we would be locked in Texas. Sure enough, we got zero.
Yeah. Bautista moved around a lot, too. Yep. Like, that was
we went to Toronto and became a world.
So one of the things I absolutely want to give you credit for is, like, I think you're the real Alex now. Like, I feel like your personality comes through now in your post-playing career. I'm like, that's the guy that if he was like that in New York, like, there's that transcendent moment where it's like people that aren't even Yankee fans would be like, yeah, how could you hate that guy? Like, how could you? So when you're in New York and it's 2004, did you feel that you couldn't be yourself because you were injected into the rivalry as a reigning MVP, highest paid guy, and the rivalry had never been hotter? So it's like, now I have to have this like cold exterior. Did you feel like you couldn't be yourself immediately?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt. And I felt like very robotic, right? Like, I didn't want anybody to kind of read my mind or get too close. I had this veneer that was like basically keeping a China wall between me and people. And even guys like Poppy and Manny would say like, hey man, why aren't you like this? Like when we would have dinner after the game that I was at his house, he was like, Chiquito, you gotta relax, just chill out. You gotta be yourself. Yeah. You're not this person out there, be that person out there. So, and I couldn't get there and it was so frustrating for me. And you know, once I had my suspension and I kind of went in and I got some therapy and I just figured out and turned the lens inward, I realized, like, man, what the fuck? If they're not gonna like me, at least be me. They don't like me now, and I'm not even being myself. Yeah. So what am I doing? I'm wasting my time and my space. And one of the things that a lot of people don't know about Poppy and I is our relationship has been so respectful. It's very much like brothers. There were so many times that I was struggling that the big Red Sox would bring me to his house with Tiffany and his kids, and they would feed me sancocho and this and that. And there was times when Poppy was struggling that I would bring him to my place. And I would just, you know, we talk about fitness and being in shape and nutrition. So it was this really loving relationship. While we were killing each other on the field, it was this brotherhood in the background that I thought was super healthy.
I got to the point sometimes that I really, really worry about this guy right here. You know, because when it comes down to a person, a player, you know, us going way back and getting to know each other real well, you know, believe it or not, sometimes people think that we are robots, that we have no feeling, we don't have things to care about more than just baseball, you know, and that's why my personality always jumps in, and I try to change people's mentality based on that. You know, this guy right here, he means so much and represents so much when it comes down to baseball, that you don't want to see a guy like that struggling, you know? You don't want to see a guy like that. You know how many kids and the youth, the people, want to wear the number 13 doing well, so I want to be like that guy. Mm-hmm. You know, that guy, you know, when you go to New York, every time you go to New York, you get off the plane, all you think about is, man, the number 13 going to be playing third base right there. So, man, it's on. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, the feeling not being himself thing type of thing, and me being who I like to be, which I don't give a fuck what anybody think of me.
Right.
I just want to be like that. I'm not disrespectful, but that's how I am. You know what I'm saying? Because I know how hard is the routine of getting every day, play baseball, deal with the fans, deal with the media, deal with your family, travel, the whole package. Mm-hmm. You know. Sometimes I used to be like, man, people, when the salary was going up for baseball player, and I heard people bitching about it, I was like, they think this is that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Bro, if they know the routine and the effort and the focus, the dedication that we had to put behind this whole thing, they would pay us like movie star. Mm-hmm. Because I'm telling you, we go through hell. Like, now that I'm not playing and you told me about it, I'm trying to enjoy my life, and whenever I even think about the routine of baseball, what it takes, especially when you separate yourself from an average player to be a superstar, that everybody is counting on you. I'd be like, I'm so happy that I'm not playing anymore.
So
you know
true.
What I'm saying?
So true.
But going back to A-Rod, bro, how can you be the type of father you are, right? With everything that is going on business-wise, mm-hmm. with yourself. Like, I follow you. You follow me. We stay in touch. I love the type of father you are with your girls. I try to be the best dad ever, but I like the relationship that you got going on. And this guy, let me tell you, whenever he's on the phone, when he's not talking to his daughter, he's talking to Bill Gates, Warren Buffett. We're doing makeup. He's talking to. I'm like, bro, how do you break it down that easy?
Well, I mean, you know, Poppy, my girls, you know, I think part of it is my father left when I was 10, right? So when he left, I was so heartbroken that I remember making a promise to myself. I said, like, dear God, if I ever get a chance to be a father and I'm lucky enough, I'm going to make sure I don't fuck this up like my father did, right? And I just wanted to be really deep with myself there. And from the moment happened that I became a father 16 years ago to Natasha and Danella, like, that is, like, first, second, and third in my life. And part of it is you got to work at it, right? It's got to be a priority. Like, there's nothing more important than those little girls, you know, whether it's having dinner last night or whether it's meeting with Cynthia, who's my ex-wife for the last hour, and we co-parent, and she's still one of my best friends, right? And just an incredible mother with a master's in psychology, right? So it's really a priority. And, like, tomorrow, every Saturday, Chiquito, you'll like this. What I did is I created a breakfast club, and that breakfast club is every Saturday from 8 to 10 o'clock, from 8:30 to 10 o'clock a.m., which we sit there right in that table. They're miserable. A breakfast club, just them two and me alone, no phones, no iPads, just let's connect and let's recap what happened over the week. And it's just putting things like that in place that make it a priority, and then you can never miss, right? Hmm. And that's really important to me. And just watching them develop is such a so rewarding.
That is incredible. And by the way, I didn't know that you guys were close back then, like in the earlier days. Did you feel like you couldn't? It was almost like early, like, wrestling, where, like, the bad guys drove in one car, the good guys drove in the other car, and, like, no one could see that they were actually friends in real life. Did you feel like in 03, 04, not 03 because you weren't there yet, but 04, 05, that you couldn't let on? Like, hey, this guy's actually
like,
I know, a very
for
good
me, like, a lot of our boys and, like, our gringos, like, they would be like, yo, man, are you guys going to be, like, are you guys lovers? What's going on with you guys?
Yeah,
like,
because they come in with a hug, you know, the bodies type of thing, you know, but which is weird for people, especially back on those rivals, because you know what people think of Red Sox and Yankee. They think that we are true enemy, people that don't like each other at all.
Then now it's just like, it's amongst the fans.
Well,
back
we fixed
then,
that.
It's like this dude is bloodying people on the field. Dude, Tanyan Sturt's walking away with blood coming out of his ear.
True story, right here. We got into a fight one time, right?
Yeah.
At Fenway.
Yeah.
We got into a fight. Uh-huh. And when I come out of the dugout, the first guy that I bump is into this one right here. So I take a quick left. I went to the next guy. I'm telling you, it's like I love the competition, but I never like fighting, to be honest with you. Yeah. Like, the fighting thing wasn't my thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You're a big guy. You intimidate. Yes. You know, I'm going to come to get your ass. That type of thing. But the fighting thing was never my thing because I like the competition. I like to whoop your ass and then take you out for dinner. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. That was my thing. Now the fighting thing, like, we got into a couple of brawls on the field that I was like, this is not happening. But then I learned one thing from these big guys. They go into the field, not with the mentality of fighting.
Yeah.
They go into the field with the mentality of, hey, okay, let's move on. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I kind of transcend that to the next generation of players. Because, bro, at the end of the day, this is not the WWF, you know what I'm saying?
No.
This is baseball. And I always thought about what kids would think of when we watch us starting playing baseball, and then all of a sudden we're dropping punches out there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's the type of thing that didn't make sense.
But Jerry, but let me tell you something about this guy that I wish fans at home can eavesdrop like they're doing right now. And, you know, we may be considered champions and MVPs and superstars and all that, but we are like every human being, right? We have pain. We struggle. There's slumps. We got to put in one leg at a time, you know, one shoe at a time. And what I loved most about my relationship with Big Poppy was how sincere he was, but really how much we learned from each other. And to the point where every time we spoke, right, 75% of our conversation was like, okay, Chiquito, tell me, what's your approach? What are you doing? What are you doing? Are you lifting before the game? Are you lifting after the game? He used to be before, then he started lifting before to get a pump right before BP. And then I would start incorporating that into my game. And then we would say, like, tell me, what are you watching in video? Now you're watching the bullpen guys. Yeah, I want to get ready for them because I already know the starter. Okay, oh, Chiquito, here's what I learned. That ball that's an inch off the plate, I'm not swinging at that pitch now. So I'm going to just move up on the plate, and I'm going to take that play. All these lessons back and forth, and it's this evolution of never stop learning that I think the fans at home will go like, really? That's what you guys talk about? Mm-hmm. It was really honing our craft and becoming better each and every day.
Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but I got to tell you about the good folks over at Whistle Pig. Why are they my favorite whiskey brand? Great question, because they're based in New England. They're straight out of Vermont. The hardworking people of New England transfers right over to Whistle Pig. Quality ingredients. Look at this pour. It's my favorite whiskey glass. Bet you didn't know I was a whiskey guy, but yeah, look at this. Whew, what a glass. How do I like it? Straight. Cheers. Smooth. Tastes amazing. And I know that you'll love it.
David Ortiz, Big Poppy, huge whiskey guy. I'm a huge whiskey guy. You could be too. 100% rye.
Whistlepigwhiskey.com and go get some yourself.
Do it.
Didn't you find that fascinating?
That was unbelievable. To me, that was incredible because the thing is that, Jared, we basically dedicate so much to be good. Mm-hmm. When it comes down to play baseball, that I always say this about baseball players. Our mind never stops. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, this is the time still that I have issues trying to fall asleep. I sleep 5 hours and I'm good. And let me tell you why. In baseball, when I used to play, if I was struggling, my mind would not shut down just because I was trying to figure out how to get out of it. And if I was doing good, my mind would not shut down either because I want to... When you are doing good, as a baseball player, when you are doing good, you can wait for the next day to show
that's
up.
That's right.
It's like when you are struggling, you don't want the next day to show up. Mm-hmm. It's that stupid.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So your mind always speeding up. So it's hard to control that, especially when you are at the type of level when everybody is expecting you every day to come and bring something to the table. You know what I'm saying? This guy, when he talk about that we used to go out for dinner, I used to love taking him out for dinner in Boston because I know I was going to pay half of the tab. So he used to bring his own dinner to the restaurant. He used to bring his own dinner to the restaurant. One night we went out and he put him on the table right there. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? He got to take care of himself very well. Yeah. But let me tell you, going back, Ava, to your career, what is the one thing that you miss the most about baseball?
Wow. You know, a lot of it was the stuff we're talking about, right? Like I used to love the honing the craft, the practice, getting in the cage. I was a gym rat, right? Like that's just what I love the most. I miss my 4 or 5 at-bats per night. And I miss the competition. I miss watching you come out of that damn dugout and Fenway faithful just go nuts. And you know, him and Manny, it was one of the most unbelievable things to have to play against them 19, 20 times a year plus playoffs, because I've never seen a better 1-2 punch in the history of the game than these two guys. And I'll tell you why. Both of them can make contact. Both of them can hit great pitching. Both of them can hit for power and contact and average. And they both didn't chase. Mm-hmm. One was righty. One was lefty, and they're both Dominican. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a pretty damn good sauce.
Yeah, and they both just couldn't be rattled either. I mean, like, they...
Fearless.
It was
torture, bro.
Insane. And to think... I mean, there was a time... I mean, like, if Alex came to Boston, that means Manny wouldn't have been there. But how different do you think your life would be if you did end up in Boston in 2004?
Well, I would have played shortstop for probably another, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. I always missed playing shortstop because it's like playing point guard in basketball or quarterback, right? It's what I've known ever since I was 10 years old. So that would have been fun. I would have probably kept my number 3, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I thought it could have been, I've never been the person that says what if, right? But you, Jerry, you put him in a what if situation. I thought it would have been a good fit. I thought it would have been great for baseball because it would have created, you know, Jeter at short and me at short and, you know, popping up. I think it would have made a really cool story for baseball. That's what really got me excited. And then the opportunity to win a championship. I knew Theo and Jared and Larry Aquino and John Henry. These guys are so damn good, so smart, so forward-thinking that they had a crystal clear view of the future. And I thought, with Schilling, with Pedro, that we can be world championships. And sure enough, I was right. I was just wasn't part of it.
You just weren't part of it. Yeah. So, like, if you guys were friends then, what is the line of communication during the postseason in 2004? Like, is it just like, hey, like, we're best friends and everything, but, like, we got a job to do. You have a job to do. Like, we can pick up the friendship in November because, like, now we're going head-to-head.
I mean, look, we want to kill each other when we're on the field.
Were there phone conversations during the ALCS?
We never stopped.
No, things never stopped. I mean, you go on the field during batting practice, and first thing you see, if you go to New York, was A-Rod. He come to Boston, first thing he saw was me. So it was something that never stopped. I mean, we're doing exactly what we want to do. You're playing baseball, the sport you love. Every day you're trying to figure things out. So there's always conversation about things, about mechanic, how you feel, pitches, in, out, up, down, slow, fast, you know. Those are the type of conversation that people had no idea that as a baseball player, as an athlete, you have. Because, like I say, baseball is a unique sport. And it's because, yeah, you work as a team, but you got to figure things out on your own. You know what I'm saying? In basketball, you have five guys. There's a shooter, right? The guy's hot, we do well. The guy's cold, we struggle. In baseball, everybody had to bring something to the table at some point, either fielding the ball, pitching, hitting, stealing a bag, making a play. Everybody need to bring something to the table. Mm-hmm. But A-Rod, one of the most incredible rival that we were part of while we play was the rivalry between us and that one team that you guys had 2003 2004, basically 2004, once you got there. I always keep on telling people, bro, listen, when you talk about Thunder, when you talk about Thunder, that 2004 Yankee team, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember that. During the playoff, the first game, you guys scored like 18 runs.
It was 19-8 in game three, but I think game one was like 10-8.
No, but they were like stomping. Like the Green Monster at the one first game got like 30 dents from this guy. It was like firework hitting the wall. You know, like, listen to this.
He homered in game four, too.
Huh?
He homered in game four.
Bro, sometime, this is the time still that I can believe we beat you guys because of the lineup that y'all have. Have you ever thought about the lineup? You go through Jeter. The second hole hitter was Masui?
No. That's it, Bernie.
It was Bernie, right?
Yeah.
And then you, Giambi, Chofield, Max Zui,
yeah,
Posada. What the fuck?
Yeah, like Miguel Cairo.
This is not a happy ending story. So
you're the host, so you can
talk about it. You're
I'm
setting
making,
me up.
I'm making you feel good.
I've seen this movie. This is not a Boston happy ending for me.
But reality is, man, what was your mentality going into the Yankees when you first got there?
You know, a lot of it was pressure, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. You know, I had just come off an MVP and a gold glove. I just got named captain in Texas, and this deal in Boston fell apart. We worked on it so hard. And then all of a sudden, this Yankee pivot happened right after the MVP ceremony in New York. And all of a sudden, 10 days, I'm, you know, being awarded this, you know, jersey. And George Steinbrenner brings me over to New York. And with that was a lot of changes. I had a young family. I had to move to third base. And then I needed to now fit in. I felt like I was totally from behind, an outsider coming in. So a lot of it, Poppy, was pressure. And really, it probably took me 3 or 4 years to get comfortable in New York and say, okay, now this is my team. This is home. And I see Lindor seeing through a little transition. It takes time, you know. It takes time. A little different when, Poppy, you came from Minnesota. You were just, I got nothing to lose. I got nothing but upside.
I hit bottom.
Yeah. For me, it was like, it was nothing to win. Like, I had just won the MVP and the gold glove. And I wasn't a four-time world champion like the rest of the crew. So I put more pressure on myself than I needed to, but that was my frame of mind.
And this is very personal. Things change in New York once the big boss passed away.
Yeah. I think, you know, the boss, George Steinbrenner, was such a great man that you miss him every day to this day. And you have a clear vision of pre-boss passing away and post. And his echoes left everywhere. But he was such an incredible man and such a great leader. And Poppy, whatever you wanted, the answer was yes. But you better fucking perform.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And it's the best hotels, you got it. It's the best food, you got it. It's the best coaches, you got it. But, you know, he was really about VCP. I call it vision, capital, and people. He had a clear vision that he wanted the Yankees to be number one in the world. Not in baseball, but in any sport. Number two, he said, we have great revenues. I'm going to deploy it, and I'm going to get the best talent around. I'm going to spend a shitload of money. And C, I'm going to get P, the people right. I'm going to get the best people, pay them the best, but there is no excuse why we can't win a championship every single year. And that's what I learned from George, and he's just, he left a big mark in my life.
Do you feel like you get enough credit for 2009? Because like, I feel like the way that he carried the 2013 team, I mean, the 04 team, he had his moments. That was like a collective thing. But you were essentially the 09 championship. Do you feel like history looks back on that and is like, that, like, not only did A-Rod get his ring with the Yankees, but that was his championship?
You know, I don't know. I've never thought about it that way, but I got to tell you, I enjoyed the fuck out of that championship. God damn.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. From 04 to 09, 5 years, it felt like 50 years. Because we were so close, I can fucking taste it. And the reason why I can fucking taste it is because Poppy and I knew that the winner of Game 7 was going to be world champions of our game.
That's it.
Right? Because we knew St. Louis, we had them in the bag. And sure enough, I didn't even watch the World Series. I was fucking in bed for 3 weeks, depressed out of my mind. Because it was such a painful series to lose. But we knew they were going to run over. I mean, the Yankees and Red Sox were so... And nothing against St. Louis,
no,
right?
No,
They had a great team and Pujols. But we were playing at such a high level. It was like Lakers, Celtics with Magic and Bird. And that's what we had. It was just a special time. You never had more people watching. Ratings were great. We never played a game that wasn't a sellout. It was just an intensity of baseball that it was absolute apex. And we knew that the winner would be world champion. So that's why that was so painful. So for the next 5 years, you just couldn't sleep. So when 09 happened, man, it was 1% joy. It was 99% relief. But it just felt good to, like, take that elephant off my back.
I really feel good about you winning the championship, because it seems like you take that huge monkey off your back.
Yeah.
You know, it was the whole not performing in the playoff talk and all the bullshit. Because what people don't realize is that in the playoff,
that wasn't even true.
Exactly. You know, like people don't understand that you go 0-4 whatever in 3 games, and for people that is in a slump. But in the regular season,
right,
you go 10 games without hitting anything. And it happened in a blink of eyes. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can get 0-20 like this real quick. And to be honest with you, nobody's trying to struggle.
Right.
That's what people don't realize. You know what I'm saying? This guy is working his tail off to perform, to bring to the table something to help his vocal up. But you can, just the sound of people saying that, oh, he can't. And all of a sudden, he ended up winning a playoff and performing at the highest level, I was happy for that.
Yeah, I like I say this as a Red Sox fan, it would feel weird if he didn't have at least one. Like, it would be like, that's, it would have been like a missing piece where it's like you at least wanted to see him reach the top of the mountain one time. So that 09 one, but do you feel like there, besides 04, I guess, was there a Yankee team that you felt like that was the team that should have done it? That we missed the mark that year?
If you're 21 or over and you dip tobacco, pouches, or long cut, you have to try the tobacco alternative, Black Buffalo. It's everything that you love about dipping, including pharmaceutical-grade nicotine, just without the actual tobacco leaf or stem. It's dip literally made from edible green leaves and food-grade ingredients with the same flavors and texture as traditional tobacco products. No compromise. Black Buffalo sells products on their website at blackbuffalo.com. and is available in both long cut and pouches, as well as nicotine-free versions called Zero. Actually, I used to dip a lot back then. Yeah, I used to go to Fenway a lot back in the day, and I would throw a lip in to watch David Ortiz of the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, man. I used to get my groove on.
Yeah.
While I was going to go to here, man, I have to.
I mean, shit, that was my Fenway routine. But I kicked it all done because of Black Buffalo, and you can too if you use promo code BIGPOPPY. At checkout, you get 20% off your first order on Black
Buffalo. 20% off, people. Come on.
Good deal.
Come on.
I definitely think 04, obviously, 09. I thought, and I'm interested to know what you think about this, Poppy, when Johnny Damon entered our clubhouse, we went from good to great. And obviously, we brought in CeCe, we brought in Teixeira, we brought in AJ Burnett. But Johnny gave us an element of, like, I don't give a fuck to our clubhouse. I mean, we were a bunch of corporate Goldman Sachs bankers in pinstripes. That's who we were. We're very boring, very corporate. It was the Yankee way, right? And it's okay. But when Johnny came in, he gave us a little bit of, like, hey, let's put on some music, right? Let's just fucking, like, just settle down. Let's have some fun.
Listen up.
And when he entered our clubhouse, we became world champions. When he left our clubhouse, we weren't world champs anymore.
Interesting. That is interesting that you say that. And so in, like, preparation for this, like, I went back and I was watching highlights of your career. And, I mean, I probably saw most of them live anyway. But I think people...
Yes, you did.
I did. I feel like a lot of...
I don't miss a game.
No, I really don't. Like, we were doing an interview and I had, like, the phone set up, like, watching the game there. But, like, the relationship with Derek Jeter, I feel like that was overblown. Because when everyone was like, well, I mean, like, Jeter never validated A-Rod as a Yankee. And then I'm watching you have these monster games, get into the dugout, and it looks like Derek is one of the first people to come greet you. He's got a big smile on his face. I was like, what are people seeing that I'm not seeing here? Like, do you think that was completely overblown?
I think it was fun for the media to play with it. I mean, you have two big stars in New York. Derek is one of the greatest competitors I've ever been around, and a good human being with great family. Dr. Jeter is phenomenal. His mom, Dorothy, sister. I mean, he's just a good guy. He's a five-time world champion. Look, we did some great things together. We'll both be remembered for winning that championship together in 09, and I'm glad we did that. But I have nothing but the utmost respect for Derek. And let me go one step further. Whoever's doubting him here as an owner, just give him time, because he's going to have the last laugh.
Mm. That's awesome. What is the one year, the one season that you feel like you were hot all year round? I got the one season that I mean.
What year was that for you?
For me.
08?
I think it was 07.
07.
07?
07.
I hit 332, son.
Yeah, 06, yeah. You had 50 bombs.
Hey, but listen, for the power hitter, that's not surprising, to be honest with you. Was just surprising for a power hitter to hit for power and average.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I can go and chase 50 homer every year, but my average is going to be down. My strikeout probably going to be up. And yes, I'm going to hit more. But to me, to be able to hit for power, average, down strikeout, high end on base percent and a slugging percent, to me, those are the type of years that are the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what you want, you feel, I mean, you have many years with great batting average, power, on base percent, and add to it, Gold Glove caliber.
Yeah, no, defense. Thanks. You know, I had my worst and best year in back-to-back years. 06, I had a terrible year. And the numbers were okay. You know, I hit 36 and drove in over 100. But I was never consistent, both sides of the plate, and I just didn't feel like myself. The minute I got home that offseason in 06, mm-hmm. I went to work. I built a batting cage here in Coral Gables, and I just became a madman about my work, and I wanted to just clean up my game. 07, I hit, I think, 15 home runs in April, and it was a wrap. I won the MVP in April, and that was, 07 was, I think, by far my best year, but I was playing mad with a chip on my shoulder, and I wanted to fucking kick ass and take names.
Yeah, that was a ridiculous year. That was when they were talking about, oh, that's when Alex got his pinstripes. It's like, no. You don't, like, was that your, like, when did you think your pinstripe moment? Well, you're going to say it was 09. You're going to say when you get a ring.
I'm still trying to find them. No, I think 09. 09 cemented everything for me. I mean, you know, it's funny. You think about all the great things you've done as an individual, but people remember winning and how you make them feel. Mm-hmm. And when I walk around New York, there's not a day that goes by that someone doesn't say, hey, thanks for 09, right? Nobody says, hey, thanks for the 50 home runs. Mm-hmm. Thanks for 09, because sure. People do not forget champions.
So you guys, you had very different starts to your career and you had very different finishes to your career, where David was just like, hey, I'm done. This is my last year. And he rides off into the sunset with 40 doubles and 38 bombs. Mm-hmm. The ending to your career was very different. Mm-hmm. And I respect it greatly, because I think that there would have been a line of teams that would have been like, Alex Rodriguez, he needs, what, 4 home runs for 700? Here you go. Like, mm-hmm. the fact that you were able to walk away with 700 home runs so close, but you, I'm assuming you wanted to retire a Yankee. Like, yeah. I assume that it was like, hey, I want, like, my legacy is here. I built something here, and I'm going to put my legacy over a record that I could hit in, like, 4 home runs with
he
another
was born
team.
Born in New York, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, talk more about that. Like, I'm interested in your thought process when, you know, you, like David was talking about, you put so much time and effort into becoming a great baseball player. You're knocking on the door of 700 home runs, and you chose, I want to retire a Yankee.
Yeah, over... nobody wants to end up with 696. We weren't meant to do 696 or 99. Yeah. Right. Like, we're meant to fucking finish, right?
Yes.
And I've worked from day one to get 700. Not home runs, but you don't work for that. But once you get close, you're like, 500, 600, 700, 800. Mm-hmm. So you want that number.
I said that was day one of the rehabilitation of your public image.
Interesting.
Because, like, you chose, like, I'm putting... Like, this is, like, for Yankee fans, this is for you. Like, I want to walk away as a Yankee versus, like, yeah, I mean, I could go to the Marlins right now, pop 4 and in front of 9,000 fans, and who cares? But, like, I got 700, but you chose the legacy.
Yeah, you know, Jared, it was very tempting, and it was hard, right? Because, fuck, man, you're like, you can taste right it. And a couple of days before, I had hit a ball, like, 1,000 feet to left center field. I'm like, man, I'll get 700 by next week. We get hot, you get a swing, you're there. And I'll never forget how classy and honorable Hal Steinbrenner was. I remember he walked to me in the locker room and he said, hey, big guy, I want to talk to you. And he basically broke down what the organization was thinking. How do you want to do it? I want you to think about this. Come back to me and tell me how you want to go about it, and we'll follow your lead. And I took a couple of days and talked to my mom and my brother, my sister, and my family. And I said, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, walking away. Then we went to Boston. I sat for 3 days. And the Boston faithful started going, hey, Rod, hey, they wanted on a bat. Yeah. I couldn't believe it. I thought they were punking me.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Everyone started laughing in our dugout.
The same guy. Yeah.
And so what I really appreciate from Steinbrenner, Hal, and Hank at the time when he was alive, was that they gave me an opportunity to come back home, you know, sellout crowd on August 12th in 2016. All my family and friends, my beautiful girls were there, people from all over the world that had followed me and supported me for 25 years through the ups and the downs. And I had a night, you know, under the moon at Yankee Stadium where I can actually have a salute and have a beautiful game. We won the game. It was a national TV game. Kevin Burkhardt came in and did that game.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got home. I flew home with my family that Friday night, and I arrived here probably like 4 or 5 in the morning, and I got in my theater, and I was like, Poppy, I was like, what the fuck just happened? My, you know, they say athletes die twice, when you retire and real death. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this shit's over. And like a collage, I can see like my whole career going back to Peoria, Arizona, mm-hmm. Escogido, all the, you know, double A, triple, and it was just like a freaky time. And I'm in my black theater, and Saturday and Sunday, the phone rings, and I get two organizations to call me and say, hey, it's August 13th now. Is that Saturday? Why don't you take a week off, get yourself in shape, and come play in September. We'll open it up, the rosters, and get the four home runs. And pre-suspension, Alex would have said, yeah, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That fits right into my thought process, right? And within 5 minutes, what I realized was I was so content with what Hal Steinbrenner had honored me with and the opportunity that to play in front of my family that I said 696 as a Yankee is more valuable than 700 with another uniform. Mm-hmm. And to this day, I'm still a Yankee. So it was one of the best decisions that I made, even though I said, fuck, I wish I had 700.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you on that one, Ira, because I remember I got to the point that being a Boston for a while, and then the contract situation shows up, I had the opportunity to go to some of the places. Probably for a couple extra meal, you know, but thinking about the history already built up in Boston, my family, having to move to another city, my legacy, you know, the connection that I have with the fans. I was like, hey guy, look, let's settle. You know, let's get to the point where you guys are comfortable, uncomfortable. Let's cut off the bullshit. You guys know what you guys are going to get from me. Let's get there. And I play another 6 years there.
Was that with Theo or with John Henry?
That was with Theo, yeah. And you sometimes might feel like you're going to get something extra going somewhere else after you've been in the place for a while. And you would think that the grass is greener on the other side. And it comes down to be not what you were expecting, you know what I'm saying? So I respect those type of decisions because I have worn those shoes before, and I know what it takes. For example, the situation with our boy, Albert Pujols, you know what I'm saying? You get to the point where this is a guy that is anonymous, Hall of Fame, and all of a sudden that situation happened in Anaheim. Now, in your mind, you're thinking, well, I was thinking about going to the Hall of Fame with Anaheim. Mm-hmm. Now what's next? Mm-hmm. You know, me as a player, I would think of it. I would see it that way. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But reality is that there's situation that we face that it seems like it's easy in the picture right here, but at home when we are sitting down thinking like here things go to the next level. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know what I mean. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You gotta make the right decision, and I think I totally agree with you. That was the best thing you ever did. Stay where you were because you are a big representative of the New York Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
So I got the chance to talk to David for like an hour and a half a couple weeks ago. And I asked him about the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had a vote, I'd vote for both of you. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a slam dunk case for both of you. What would that honor mean to you?
Oh, man. Like for me, it would mean everything. I mean, there's no denying it. I mean, when you strap it up when you're a little kid, I mean, you want to be a world champion and a Hall of Famer. You can make it up, right? That's your dream. And David and I have played for so long, and we've played so hard. And look, it's never been a straight line, that's for sure. And that, for my case, I have to deal with that. But there's no question it would mean the world for me to get in and for my family.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like who would be the first person that you call?
Probably my mom, my siblings, and then obviously my daughters. We're small knit, man. We're like five deep.
Yeah.
That's it. Five deep, baby.
That would be incredible.
I'll tell you what. The game of baseball is a family game. We are so attached to our sibling that you never get like disconnect. Like the good news, the bad news, the cheering type of things, it's always go to the family first. Mm-hmm. 'Cause your family is always there. If you look at when the guys are being picked by during the draft or because you won the MVP, who are behind them? The family. Yeah. Always the family is right there. Mm-hmm. Because the family is the one thing that help us to navigate through the struggle.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? I can tell you because I struggle so much while I play baseball, And once I get home, daddy, daddy, daddy. I swear to God, that kind of like give you a new way to look at things. Because the whole world, you feel like the whole world is crashing on you when you are struggling in baseball. That's how personal, as a baseball player, we take it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? When you are struggling, it's like you watch him from the outside, you'll be like, that guy's famous, he's making a lot of money, he's making a shitload of money.
Yeah.
He go for four, he don't care. Right. He can get it tomorrow.
So I'm curious, since I have both of you here.
Yeah.
When you guys were playing, when you walked into a room, the mood changes. It shifts. Like there's an energy and an aura about you guys and the guys that you played with. I feel like that's lacking a little bit now, but we're getting back to a place where there are stars and it's star power, but it's not transcendent yet. Like, there's not people doing SNL skits of Fernando Tatis Jr. yet. How do we get players of today that are superstars and are super talented, how do we get them to the same level of superstardom that you guys have?
I think it starts with this. Like, I think we have so many unbelievable talented young players with great personalities that we know, but the world doesn't know. And I think there's a part of baseball still that still plays prevent defense. When you look at the NBA and NFL, and they're playing offense all the time, right? And he's one of the most aggressive guys that I've ever met, because he's going to come in the room, he's going to light it up, he's going to be himself. But that was celebrated. I think there's a part of the game that, you know, kind of just is very reserved because of our history. But I think we have to let it fly. I think content rules the world. I think we have to open up the floodgates, open up clubhouses, open up batting cages. If you want to be known, and you have to let people get to know you. The reason why they liked us or didn't like us, both are actually okay. They're both great for business, being polarizing or being loved, right? And you have that right here beautifully, both in opposite cities. But I think people fell in love because they knew Poppy. They knew his heart. They knew that he gave that fucking speech that just blew it out because it was from the heart. And that's important. Like, if we don't get that as a fan, we're not going to invest. We're not going to spend. We're not going to be... Like, people were devoted to us. I think you're right, Jared. I think the game is coming like this. Tatis, megastar, Acuna, Soto, Machado, Harper. I mean, it's just talent coming out of everywhere. Now, we just got to get to know them in genes. Get to know them as personalities, their families, their habits. What do they like? Do they like to eat ice cream? Do they like to eat Presidente? Do they like to... Whatever the fuck it is. Like, we need to know them because we don't know them. The game needs to do a better job. And I think owners and players need to work together to reveal these great personalities and show the world how great their sport is.
My last question for you.
Yeah.
What was the one manager that got the best out of you?
Oh, Lou Piniella. Lou's my guy. You know, Lou's, in many ways, he was like a father to me. You know, he got me at 18. I had Rich Hoffman in high school for 3 years, and he literally handed me off to Lou Piniella, and then he had me till I was 24, and I went to Texas. And he was my professor, right, in hitting. I felt like I got a lot of Billy Martin of him. I got some Charlie Lau, some George Brett, with this, always taught about great teacher of hitting. Lou's and his wife Anita were, I love him to death.
Awesome.
Alex Rodriguez, we know you're a busy guy. You got a lot of stuff going on. We appreciate you taking as much time
as you
man.
Did.
It's my pleasure.
Help. Thank you so much.
Boston strong. I still love you.
See you when I see you.